stars above you, and longer if I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. How long will I want you? As long as you want me to, and longer by far.
And it's a good Friday morning, folks. We have at CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station, right here at the University of Winnipeg, and you're listening to the Hope Valley of No Fixed Address show with your host, Al, and producer, Debbie, alongside as usual. It's a little bit chilly out there with the wind. It's minus 16, and the wind chill is, I can't see it, minus 24. It feels a little bit worse than that. But, again, if you're going to Tim's or Robin's or Starbucks or anywhere, you're getting yourself a warm coffee or tea, get another one. Hand it out to somebody that's sitting outside the door, who are inevitably sitting outside the door where you're at. Today, we have guests. I've had Ray on before, but it's been a couple of years. And today I have Sean Ledwich from Ray on today. Sean, how are you?
Good, Al. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. Nice to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
As I do with every guest, just give me a little bit of your bio and how you ended up where you are today. Just a brief.
Oh, man.
Whatever you care to share, you know, just something brief on, and then we'll get into other stuff.
I should have thought about that question. well, a lot of, I'm bored with everything, but most recently, working at Main Street Project,
okay,
on the outreach team,
right,
for 3 years.
Yeah,
I was with the outreach van, support worker.
Yes,
working alongside peers and gabes,
yes,
helpers.
Yep, I'm having. I've done quite a bit of work with Main Street Project, so I'm sure we've met through them a little bit here and there.
Yeah, we have. I mean, we met when I worked at United Way Winnipeg.
Right.
Well, I was in the communications department there.
Right. Right.
And you were a speaker.
I still am, actually.
That's awesome. Great speaker, by the way.
No,
and then we did some training. Like, the whole outreach team was over at Siloamed for a day of training.
Oh, right.
You were, like, half of the day was Al. And
right.
And it was awesome. Yeah. You just share so much insight and wisdom about understanding, you know, a sheltered community and the challenges faced and what's happening out there.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But it's about you today.
And also, so yeah, I go off on tangents, so that's fair warning.
no worries.
I, for the last 3 months, I've been resource assistance for youth.
Okay.
As case manager here.
Okay.
A new program that they've started called BEAM, which stands for Building Empowerment through Activities and Mentorship.
Okay.
So, like doing things with youth, like our youth are 18 to 29 here. So, we do activities. You know, we go to recreational stuff, boxing, for example.
Okay.
And then I'll just working with them, like identifying what goals they want to achieve, and then just trying to kind of walk beside them to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Youth is that youth homelessness is something that's in the general sector is not necessarily on the front burners. What Ray does, is really important. Can you?
Yeah.
And again, now one of these weeks we're going to have we have Fun Drive coming up, so it's going to have to be in a while. But we'll have one of your youth participants on the air, and I know I've had a youth from Ray on before, and she's still there in a different capacity now.
Okay.
I can't remember what her name was, but she told horror stories of when she exited Child and Family Services, and she had an apartment, and all of a sudden she didn't when she turned 18. Sort of thing. How are you finding the system, or how are you finding the system or navigating the system when people exit, when young adults exit Child and Family Services?
That's a great question. Like, I'm still learning. Being at Main Street Project,
yes.
I heard, many people would share their stories while we were visiting with them, and a history of being in Child and Family Service is very, very common amongst those stories. But of course, residential school system.
Yeah.
Like, it's no secret that I think it's about 80% of the unhealthy community, according to the census that has been done, are Indigenous.
Yes.
Whereas I think the percentage of the population that being Indigenous is around 12.
Yeah.
I might have that number wrong, but it's, so there's a disproportionate representation out there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, residential schools are, and the legacy and the trauma from those from that period are at the center of it, I believe. But like youth exiting the system, Ray is such a great resource because we practice what we call the hub model,
right?
So spokes of a wheel. So when a youth comes here, anybody here can direct them to any spoke, if you will, to that service, whether it's mental health, addictions, housing. We have an amazing housing team that does practice different forms of housing depending upon the youth's needs, so that we can get a roof over their head.
Right.
And we work with CFS workers as youth are making that evolution or transgression, not transgression, when they're moving from CFS, kind of the wider world. So I see the work in just my short 3 months here. I'm seeing the work of my coworkers and the work that I'm doing as well, because I can do all kinds of different case management. I have the privilege in my position. Is really, there's a lot of prevention. Like, there are youth who, because I still work in the shelter at Main Street Project.
Oh, you do?
Casually, yeah. I pick up shifts when I'm feeling extra energetic and want to work the weekends as well. The line between somebody having a home and ending up in emergency
centers,
whether it's Main Street Project or 190 Disraeli or Siloam, which are kind of the core area ones.
Yes.
or the youth, the more youth-serving ones, like We24, yes. Within 24 Hours Space Day.
Yeah, and the Link and yourselves.
You know, Rossbrook and Medinaway, yep. Or Safe Haven. Ray is not a shelter.
No,
Ray,
no.
We have drop-in.
Right.
Every day, Monday to Friday, from 1 till 4. And so youth come during that time and can, you know, we have a nurse here available for drop-in once a week and for appointments the rest of the week. We have a counselor. We have housing intakes. We have EIA intakes, so youth can get an income and not end up homeless. Because, of course, for somebody to get housed, they need an income. And it's not as simple as saying, buckle up, get yourself a job so you've got enough money to pay for rent. Like, they're, you know, the situations that youth sometimes find themselves in, they really just need that direct support. And interestingly, Ray's drop-in, I don't want to forget to mention this, Al, that it's extended. It just started on Monday. There, we also have drop-in from 5 to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday, and Saturday 1 to 4. So that's been a rip-roaring success.
Right.
The number of youth showing up for that has been, we've had seen some pretty good numbers, is my understanding. And during the drop-in, the evening drop-in times as well, and this is new, our kitchen is, as well as serving the drop-in youth, mm-hmm. a hot meal. They're putting together hot meals for the Main Street Project Outreach, DCSP, the Downtown Community Safety Partnership,
right.
as well as the Ray Outreach.
Right. So
that's exciting.
Well, that's,
but
yeah.
I don't know. I know I the answer to your question.
No. Good. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, I was going to ask you about you know, Ray's roles, and my producer Debbie here was just running up and down things that you do there. Debbie, just scroll down a bit. Yeah, talk about the mental health aspect of things.
Yeah, so we have it's the Mental Health and Addictions Department, and I'm just doing a count in my head. Like, I think there's 7 case managers there.
Okay.
Yeah, and so somebody can get a referral. If a youth comes to Ray, like say it's their first time, we would do what we call a pre-intake document with them, which is just a very simple one-pager, which just gets some of their vital information on it. And it also lists like the different services that Ray offers. And then the youth, I want that, yes, I want that. So if they are wanting trainers aligned, want to see a counselor initially, we would just say, well, come on the day of drop-in counseling, which is, I should know this, but I'll go look at the calendar. I'll just walk over to our calendar while I'm talking.
Yeah.
And then they can see a counselor, and then if they want to continue, then the counselor starts making appointments with them. If they're needing help with their mental health, if it feels like it's more appropriate that they have a dedicated case manager for that, or if they need help with problematic substance use, we would do a referral to the Mental Health and Addictions. They would get a case manager dedicated to them. And then that case manager is free to do pretty much anything you can imagine that a youth might need to be supported with. So, like, it could be one-on-one support. They could take them to their desk and do things on the computer together, navigate systems, crisis support. If they're experiencing a crisis, they can give them transportation, get them enrolled into counseling. We also do some external counseling referrals.
Okay.
We have some, you know, like if they're a treaty, they might be able to get some counseling through their band. So the drop-in counseling is on Tuesdays. During the 1-4 process. So somebody could just come and see our counselor on a Tuesday. And a lot of different youth serving agencies, like I know Huddle Broadway has drop-in counseling as well. Like all these kinds of places like Huddle, Rossbrook, Friends Neighborhood Association, like Native Clan Organization, they all put their calendars on their Facebook pages, listing all these resources. So Facebook is a great resources to figure out who's doing what. And our nurse clinic is on Friday. And then on Thursday, we do EIA intake. Wednesdays, a couple days a month, we do housing intake. So people who need housing.
Yes.
Or their current housing. Because a lot of times what happens with, especially young people, Al, mm-hmm. is their housing, they're living somewhere, but it's really precarious.
Yes.
Maybe they're essentially couch surfing, so they consider themselves to be housed, but they're not really. Or they're in a parental or guardian situation that is not working for them,
yeah.
so they don't want to be there. But feels very desperate to them. And then that's kind of the critical moment when, or the critical period when they may end up choosing to go to an emergency shelter. And once, you know, thank goodness for our emergency shelters, but let's be real, like when somebody is spending their time at an emergency shelter, mm-hmm. the risks in their lives can be increased. They may be exposed to.
Yeah, big time. You know, I spent time as an adult in Salvation Army for 14.5 months. And
yeah.
There are serious you know, health and physical risks being in a shelter. And I can just imagine it's 10 times worse as a youth, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then they can become, like, a person can get used to that life then, as you know. And it can feel harder. And the real challenges of moving away from that kind of existence it just gets hard. It gets harder. Like, I have opinions about encampments as well, and and what people require to successfully move from an encampment. And I know, like, the province with the Your Way Home strategy outreach teams.
I have very specific problems with that. with the province's strategy there.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, you know, Bill C-93 in the Constitution, says everybody's got a right to housing, everybody's got a right to not to be housed, right? And and what they did is they went down to Texas and Houston and got Houston and got the idea of a 30-day evacuation plan for encampments. And the problem is in Houston, they do not have the right to housing in the Constitution. Here we do. And so it's essentially illegal for the province to go in and say, we're going to tear you up your, we're going to give you 30 days to get ready to leave, and we're going to put you in housing, but we're going to destroy your camp in the meantime. At the same time, and that is unconstitutional. And the other thing about it is forced housing never works. And a lot of these folks do not want housing, never want housing. And so what they're doing is putting people in housing against their will. And it just simply doesn't work. I've been in housing for 9 years now, and we have a 90% retention rate. And when you force people out of into housing, they're going to come out of housing very quickly. Because if they don't want it, right? It might take a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2-3 months, right? But they'll come out. And then it's harder again to house these folks again. And then, you know, we have the city piling on with their encampment enforcement. And, basically making homelessness illegal, making camps illegal because... they're given 10 jurisdictions as to where people can actually camp.
Yeah.
Where they cannot camp, I mean. And so it basically says you can't camp anywhere because their jurisdictions are broad. Camp, park beside beside playground, that's fine. But you can't
pretty
park.
Much,
but you can't park beside thoroughfares. You can't park here. You know, there's 10 different regions or areas of the city that they can't park.
Well, they have, the criteria for where you can't camp at all, which is pretty broad. But then even if it's anywhere else, any other public land, the dictate or the expectation is you can't be there during daylight hours.
So
you're supposed to strike your camp just after sunrise and
all that kind of thing.
Not put it up against the sunset.
That's illegal as well in the city of Abbotsford. Was sued over that very same thing, and they lost the lawsuit. The BC Supreme Court gave the campers $650,000 for that very same reason. They said, yes, you can park your tents in our parks, but you have to remove them in the morning and bring them back at night. I mean, that's like, okay, me coming into your home saying, you got to get out of your home. You have to get out of your home for 12 hours a day, right? It's just, it's not constitutional, and it tramples on people's human rights. I spent about 2 years in the city of Abbotsford working with the campers and the city out there, and it created, there's a lot of tension there because of this very same issue, right? And and again, they're tearing down camps. The problem was they've changed that because it wasn't working, and so I think that we have to be really, really careful as to how we deal with the folks in the camps, and especially when there's youth involved too. It's going to be even tougher.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, like, from my time in outreach, it was not unusual. Like, I would say 3/4 of the people who, like, City of Winnipeg residents who would approach the band to say something were positive and saying, like, thank you for what you do, great job. But then there was a portion of people who would come to express their displeasure. And I know often accusations that I knew were false. Like, I knew from my relationship with a particular camp or the people that they were, that their displeasure was focused on.
Yeah.
I knew it was true. But I didn't think that was not my role to say, you're wrong.
Yeah, right. That's not your job at all. You could get MSP in trouble or Salome in trouble.
But I tell you, Al, like, people, there's a segment of the population that, and can make them very upset. There are people who are, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear-based reactions, and then there's also anger. So it puts people, unsheltered people, at risk. And after 3 years of working outreach, where we visited camps on a daily basis, I never felt unsafe. I never experienced violence. Does violence happen? Or do encampments increase risk and violence? Like, quite likely, yes. Like, but they are not like. I think some people have an image in their head that people in encampments are all very like gang entrenched or engaging in a lot of crime and violence, and it's not true. So that said, though, the other accusation that would often be made is that outreach teams are enabling, that our presence and our visits to encampments are the reason that the encampments exist, or a reason that they persist. And to that, I would say, it was not very long ago. There's an article from 2018. I think Mayor Bowman gave some money for Main Street Project to be able to go out with a minivan during extreme cold.
Right.
And it was just like staff from the shelter, I think, going around looking to find if there was anybody in a bus shelter struggling in the extreme cold. They would bring them back to shelter. But it was not an outreach, like a 24/7 outreach team. There were some other outreach, like small grassroots teams that existed, I believe. But there was a time not long ago when the camps were not visited, and they still existed. And I've had pretty close relationships with some folks who lived in encampments for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation with a couple of them, like when we had extra time on our hands to shoot the breeze, and like they'd say, without like Main Street Project outreach, they would stay in their camp and like get hungrier and hungrier, or like not have safe supplies, not have warm clothing. So, but they were still there. I mean, their camps exist, right? And my personal opinion about how, like, the Your Way Home strategy, I know you have issues with it, but because it's wrapped up now with the city's policies, and they're putting those signs out and then claiming success when there's nobody at the camp anymore and they go in and clean up. But I mean, the sign itself may just be scaring people away, so they may be going to another camp, or they may be going to someplace that's unsafe. I think displacement is a real concern. And obviously, like, the unsheltered problem is complicated. It's so complicated. And, of course, the human nature is to try to simplify and see things as simple. So it's difficult, I think, for the city, to be fair to them, to explain what's happening or to even understand what's happening. And I don't think they fully understand where did those people go, for sure. Did they all get housed, or did they just decide they needed to truck on down the road because they were being threatened and they were concerned about losing their only belongings in the world? But my feeling about how, like, one thing that I would agree with the Your Way Home strategy is most people, once they've been in a camp, that in order for them to successfully transition into a home, because I heard earlier, Al, you said, like, a lot of people don't want it, and I've seen stories in the paper, like, one reporter went down to a camp, found one guy, and he was the only voice in the story, saying, I don't want to live in, I don't have any rules here, I'm happy, I don't want a landlord. Okay, that's one dude. But the vast majority, because I was still at the project when the Your Way Home strategy was launched, and we were going around and offering, we were taking people's information, and I would say 95% or more, when you explain to them, do you want to be part of this? It's supportive house, so you get your own room, you have three meals a day, you'll get a caseworker assigned to you to help you with whatever you want to work on. It's low barrier. If you're dealing with problematic substance use, you don't have to address that before you come into the housing. You know, there's some rules, of course, and any sort of communal housing situation. But it's the three meals a day and the supportive staff who are on site 24/7 and a caseworker who's there during the day assigned to them. And people want that. They want, and then they can also move with possibly their own, like, people that they consider to be their family. So I've seen groups of people come out of a camp and they're living in a Main Street Project supportive housing building all on the same floor. So they're, you know, there's that sense of safety and belonging that is maintained. So, like, that's the answer in my mind, is more supportive housing. And the other thing that I'm a big believer in, which I actually wrote an op-ed before the provincial election, saying that we needed this, and in saying this, it's not to say that you know, substance use, problematic substance use, let's not kid at each other. Like, it is a real issue amongst the unsheltered community. There's a lot of people out there, though, who don't use substances. There's a lot of people dealing with mental health. There's a lot of people who, they didn't use substances until they became unsheltered, and then they were finding themselves in those situations.
A lot of trauma out there, and people need substance abuse sometimes just to get through.
Yeah, like, if you're freezing cold, like, there's you can not feel the cold by using some substances. So that occurs for sure. But the other thing I think that the province is, they're shooting themselves in the foot by not doing this, in my opinion. But and bless all of the addiction workers. Like, Main Street Project has their detox, and the people there do amazing work, and they're always adjusting their intake process to ensure they can get the maximum number of people in to the beds that they have. The RAM clinics are, there's a lot of good people working in the RAM clinics. I've been there many times. You know, AFM, of course, and then there's other treatment centers. But when somebody is in that moment, when they want to change, when they're tired of whatever merry-go-round, substances-related merry-go-round they've been on, it doesn't necessarily happen at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. You know, it might be happening at 2 a.m. It might be happening at 4 p.m. I think we need 24-hour, 24/7 addiction services. They need to throw much, like, it should be treated as an emergency situation. If somebody has decided, I want to make a change, like, right now, you know, those moments may be few and far between and not last long. So to be able to offer somebody, like, in the outreach van, there were many situations when I had somebody say, can you help me with my use? And I'd make a phone call, and the answer, you know, we don't have a bed right now, or we do have a bed, but it's dedicated to the hospital, to hospital use. They have to go to HSC or St. Boniface Emergency and wait 12 hours or however many hours, you know, the wait time is on that day, and then they could be assigned bed. Like, it should not be hard. It shouldn't, there should be hoops. I mean, even the medical clearance system, where if somebody is using alcohol or meth, like a non-opiate substance, they can just go to a clinic like Access Downtown or McGregor and Mountain Clinic and get what they call a medical clearance, which is good for 72 hours, which is essentially the doctor asks questions about their substance use, determines if they're going to be going into a detox facility where they, you know, they're basically just given a bed, and then also deciding, like, do they need some kind of additional medication to help them with that. They have to go there first and then arrange to get a bed. I mean, it should be, so my point is, it should be a one-stop shop. They should be able to walk in, say, I want help, and the system just throws. It's like, okay, talk to this person, talk to that person. Okay, let's go. You go ahead. Here's your medication that you need to be safe and healthy. And then you got a caseworker to work on the future, your plans, after you finish with the initial detox treatment. And yeah, I don't know why. I can't for the life of me understand why. I guess it's money. What do you think, Al? Why don't we have 24/7? Why don't they treat that? Because there's so many societal costs and harms that come from not
having 24/7. Yeah, I think it's...
And I tell you, Al, sorry, I know I invited you to talk to them.
No. That's fine. That's all right.
There is an attitude out there, a perception, if you will, amongst our relatives in the community, that it is very hard to get in. Like, you know, and I've had people say, like, I'm tired of this garbage. And I'll say, well, do you want me, like, give you a sheet? Like, you're using opiates, you know, fentanyl or whatever, so you need to go to a RAM clinic. I'll give you a sheet with the RAM clinics and their times. And they say, I've tried, and I go there, and they only let a few in, you know, or, like, I've been turned away. So, and I mean, the answer to that could be, well, you need to try harder. Or maybe somebody might say, well, they don't want it bad.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. Like, why are we, like, these people are struggling. And they do want help. Why are we, like, putting, why would society put the expectation on them, okay, you got to show us how badly you want to help? If somebody's having a heart attack, you know, the EMS don't come through the front door and say, okay, I need you to stand up and get yourself onto the stretcher. And if you don't do that, obviously you don't want treatment for your heart attack bad enough. Like, maybe it's a faulty analogy, but it's true. Like, we should just be making it so easy. And because it takes people several tries.
It does. Sometimes. And sometimes five or six tries.
Yeah.
Folks, you're listening to the Hope Valley of No Fix Address show. And we have Sean Ledwick from Ray on, Ray Assistant for Youth. And we'll be right back after this quick music break. But hang in there. Sean, hang in there. We'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Okay. And we're back, folks, and we'll just pull up the weather right now, and we will see that it is how much? It is minus 16, doesn't feel, feels a little bit colder than that, and it feels like minus 23, I think. But, folks, if you're going to McDonald's, if you're going to Tim's, Robbins, get a, buy an extra coffee for that person that's going to be sitting outside the door. Buy an extra donut or a box of Timbits and hand it out. And today we're talking to Sean from Ray about youth homelessness and what you know what can be done to aid the youth. And you know the whole problem is it becomes generational, and yeah. it's not once kids are in shelter, it's really hard to get them out.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah,
and so, yeah, go ahead.
To toot Ray's horn a little more, if I may, resource assistance for youth. Like the one of the departments we have here, of course, like during the drop-in every weekday, 1 to 4, all of the services are available. But we have a department called Growing Opportunities, and they help youth with resume, you know, job searching, interview skills. You know, they offer workshops and trainings and. Also, they do paid and volunteer, so they kind of get youth right into the, like, it's not, if they're, you know, in the process of looking for a job, they can do some odd, they call it odd jobs, and it might be snow clearing or might be picking up garbage in the neighborhood or something in the building or like helping in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So they're learning skills and they make a bit of money there. And part of it's volunteerism and part of it's paid. So it's a really wonderful program. And they have also, Ray has a program called Level Up.
Where is this? Oh, that at Ray, you mean?
The Growing Opportunities is at Ray. At Ray at 125 Sherbrooke.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was just going to get into that kind of thing. That is so, you know, and again, for me as a person with lived experience, having spent a lot of time on the street and knowing how difficult it is to recover. It's you know, empowerment is everything, and I will support any organization that's all about empowerment. And when you can do that for kids especially, because they're a lot more fragile than adults. Hopefully, hopefully adults are, you know react to things better, but sometimes not. But when you can empower kids to move, empowerment moves people forward, plain and simple. And creating volunteer opportunities that mean something, creating jobs that mean something, you know, for me, that's everything. You know, I refer to clan mothers here as well. I deal with them on a few issues, and they are an organization all about empowerment. West Central Women's Resource Center is all about empowerment and moving people forward. And, you know, for me, it took me 6.5 years to get over the trauma of homelessness. And you know, the one thing that helped me along was Mom Away, giving me the opportunity to volunteer for 2.5 years, you know, and put me in a responsible role. You know, all those little things add up, right?
Yeah. And that's like our current, our executive director, Kate Schulberg, is
yes. By the way, say hi to Kate for me.
Well, you just did.
Oh, yeah.
He's sharing like the Martin Broken Leg Circle of Courage concept. Mm-hmm. So, and it's something that, like, it's this theory. Not really. I don't know. I guess it's a theory, but it's sort of a model that, like, it's identifying what, like, every human being kind of needs, like, from birth, really. But it's never too late to start injecting it into people's lives, and it's like belonging or attachment. Generosity or altruism, you know, like which volunteerism does.
Right.
Mastery, like knowing that you can achieve and you can make decisions and make choices, and independence or autonomy.
So that's so important.
Yeah, we're trying to inject these things into our thought processes and our programs, which is exciting in my mind. But people want to learn more. If anybody wants to learn more about Ray, like the website's really easy. It's rayinc, rayinc.ca. Mm-hmm. And if they want to help out what we're doing, like we do take donations of, you know, clothing and essential items and other things as well, like even, you know, some like housewares and stuff we'll put on a table and youth can help themselves. Or if they wanted, and they can bring that stuff by like Monday to Friday, one to four, or even in the evening, it would be accepted now, like from 5 to 8.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they came at 4:30, there's people here, right?
Yeah.
And on Saturday, 1 to 4 now, I think. And
it's really good that you're open on Saturdays.
Yeah, and it just began. Like, I think it's a cold weather response.
Okay. Yes.
Like, it's probably, we're going to have some more cold days, I'm sure. So it's, I think, don't quote me, I think it's till April. It might be till the end of April, but it's happening, and it's great that it's happening.
Yes.
And then if they wanted to donate money, of course, ratings.ca.
Money is always important.
Yeah, money helps.
Yes.
For sure.
So, if you care about, I know we have a really good audience here, and people who really lean into social justice issues, and I hope that folks listening out there will really contribute to it. And you know, it's so critical to mitigate or reduce youth homelessness. And I know that your organization there does such a wonderful job. And you know what, I was really impressed. I've been in your building a number of times in the past, and I see that kitchen that you have is always a buzz, and always folks learning cooking skills and things like that. And it's so encouraging when I walked in there to see people excited about making their own meals and all that kind of stuff. And I've seen so many good things come out of there, and I've heard stories. And again, I had I can't remember her name. She was on last year or 2 years ago from Ray, and she was a youth who was in an apartment, and then of course turned 18 and was evicted, ended up on the street in shelter, and finally got back again through help from Ray, and received housing again. And I've seen some of your turnaround. Some of your turnaround is has been really, really quick in housing folks, and I'm not sure how that happens because it's really tough out there. But
we have, like I said, like the rapid rehousing.
Yes.
Have some amazing workers who, like they have a lot of private market connections, and some buildings, so that can happen very, very quickly. And then we also have the transitional housing, where it's not fully supportive, but they are well supported. Like they maintain their housing worker who does regular visits,
right.
And identifies any areas that they're struggling in, and then we'll work to help solve them with alongside the youth. So it's actually like three different housing models: the transitional, and then there's kind of a more of a like a housing for like people very high needs. So people who have been chronically homeless, episodically homeless, they call it, for 6 months out of a year, or three episodes of homelessness within a year.
Yes.
And they get intensive measurements. And, I've seen, because some of the youth who visit us are, housed. Today, right? Like at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we definitely have the opportunity, but just the fact that they come here and now they're here, there's computers, there's food,
That's
hot food,
that's a
big
thing.
There's the couches, there's the TV, there's
And then to interrupt you, that the computers is a big deal, because places like Ray, to use computers is really, really important. It's communication with family at times, and just a connection with the outside world, right?
Yeah.
And music, which is so important to youth. That's a
music
key.
Music is medicine, that concept of, what's your medicine. Have you ever heard of Rat Park?
Have not.
How much time do we got? I'll keep this one fast.
You got about 5 minutes. You got about 5 minutes.
So in recent training, a couple times in harm reduction training, I've heard about this rat park thing, and what it was, it was over 50 years ago, they had done experiments with rats where they gave them regular water and water laced with heroin.
Okay.
And they put them in cages by themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And almost invariably, the bat would start using the heroin water to the point of death.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other researcher came along and was like, well, wait a minute. Like, these rats are alone, and rats are very social creatures. So he built what he called a rat park, where a bunch of rats were in an enclosure, and they had a bunch of fun stuff to do, like wheels or whatever rats like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put some stuff in there, and they could hang out with each other, you know, talk. I guess they have their own language.
Yeah, yeah.
Have sex, you know. Mm-hmm. And they had the heroin water and the regular water, and the rats, for the most part, were ignoring the heroin water. They didn't want it because they had their medicine. They had social connection. They had love. They had whatever. They had fun, activity, recreation, space.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's an important medicine, thinking about what would be in your rat park, right? Whether it's music or...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or nature.
Right.
Like, so that's important for people to do to like not want to numb themselves or escape what's going on with them. So...
Okay,
yeah.
Really interesting. But I have such a great admiration for the work that Ray does, and you know, I've not been in contact with Ray as much as I should have been in my position. But you know, I'm gonna make change for that, because my heart really goes out to the youth out there. I know how much I struggled for my 29 months on the street, or 30 months.
Yeah.
And it nearly cost me my life. And again, you mentioned briefly the healthcare system. And they are so cruel to the vulnerable, right? And like today, I sit on 19 boards and committees and do a lot of teaching there. But there's such a fight. You know,
your experience was really crappy.
There's a fight to change the system. And I know there are some good people within the healthcare system. I sit on all those boards and they're trying, but you know, they don't understand. They simply do not understand the vulnerability of people living in poverty and homelessness, and especially youth. And I have seen examples of where, you know, young people go in and they're totally disregarded. 100%. I have a real burden in my heart for the youth, you know, who suffer from homelessness, and I hate seeing young people in the shelters. It just kind of burns me up a bit, and downtown in particular, you see a lot of that going on, and panhandling with kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it leads to abuse and all that kind of stuff.
And if there's anybody like who works at the youth serving shelter or mm-hmm. the adult shelters out there, like
right.
let them know about mm-hmm. Ray. Like
yes.
tell those youth to come here at 1:00 Monday to Friday or in the evening, and they can get connected and get housing or whatever
right.
else they may need.
So, absolutely.
And further to what you're saying as well, Al, and your advocacy and your heart for you, thank you in advance. For I know, like we've talked about, one of the youth in my program has an interest in podcasting.
Yes,
and
we'll have him on in a few weeks. Yes,
CKUW is kind of a little bit like podcasting because you're not ruled by commercial advertising.
Exactly, and you know you can pick us up, you know, worldwide type of thing too. So
yeah, and then the episodes are archived, so they're available to
yes.
listen to. So. Yeah, he's excited to come and try that out. So.
And we are occupied with Fun Drive the next several weeks, so that's not with guests. So
we
have to raise money to help keep the show going and all that kind of stuff. But thanks for coming on. Any words that you or your boss there would like to say? Final words.
How can we donate to your show for the Fun Drive? How does that happen, or do we have to wait for the link and stuff?
Now, hang on.
Hi, it's Debbie here. Thanks for that question. Yeah, if you just go to ckuw.ca, you can find the links right on the website there.
Thanks, Debbie. Yeah.
Yeah, and Fundrive starts officially tonight. 5 p.m. for 2 weeks. So listen, tune in. You can call the station. That makes people very excited, too. So
right on. No donation, large or small.
And specify a NoFix address, and then we'll get to the show. thanks for coming on, and we look forward to having mind blank.
Casper.
Yeah, Casper. Yes, yeah. How could I forget Casper? thanks for coming on and explaining what Ray does. And we're going to have you more on more often as well, because I think the youth need to be more attention brought to it.
I've emptied out my brain now. I don't know what else I have to say, but that would be great. And I think If Casper wants it, like when he comes on, I'll try him, and we can talk some more about Ray, obviously.
For sure.
Casper's been a participant at Ray for a little while, and got housed through Ray.
Yes.
So, he'll have some things to say, a smart cookie, and I look forward to it.
For sure. And take care, all the best moving forward. Thank you again for coming on.
Thanks, bye-bye. Man. You too. Stay
bye-bye.
Safe.
Bye-bye. That was Sean Ledgwick from Ray, and talking about homeless youth, their youth homelessness, and Ray does such wonderful work and moves people forward and moves youth into housing, because it's so critical. And lots of times youth get on the street and they don't leave, for 10, 20 years or die. But okay, folks, here's the pitch. Come back next week. It's Fun Drive. If you like listening to the show, even if you don't, send money. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to be pitching on keeping the show alive, keeping the station alive, and keeping good people like Rob, the station manager who just walked in the door, in his office right there. Come back next week, folks, and enjoy Fun Drive. We'll be having fun on it. And if you contribute, there's prizes available, and we'll be talking about that next week. So take care, have a good week, be kind, go to Gems again, go to Starbucks, buy the extra coffee, buy water, buy donuts. Take care, see you next week.